to Chili Bowl, a podcast about that song you know but know nothing about. I'm Emily.
I'm Jamie.
Each week we will break down a topic from Billy Joel's We Didn't Start the Fire. We will take turns being the expert as we dive into these people, events, etc. Disclaimer, if you are already a history buff, this podcast isn't for you. If you're a sweet dum-dum, just like us, and want to know a little more, you're in the right place. This week's topic is Rosenberg. Or is it Rosenberg's in the song?
Rosenberg H-bomb?
I think it's just Rosenberg.
Yeah, but that's a last name?
It is a last name. Do you know about the Rosenbergs?
I know of a TV show called The Americans, and yeah. I feel like that is related.
It is related.
I love The Americans. I'm not caught up, but you watched it?
Okay, so I watched some of season one.
You weren't into it.
I wasn't as into it.
Oh, Carrie Russell.
I know. I feel like
Russell is so hot.
I feel like I'm eventually going to get back to it.
I mean, I clearly hit a wall too because I'm not caught up
either,
but it's... I think it's a good show.
I mean, it's won a lot of awards. I feel like I feel like everyone who I talk to who's watched it through loves it. So I think I just need to
get through. The first season is what got me in. And if you are
I think it was one of those things where, you know, you just like have to be in the mood. Like if you're in the mood for drama, then you're in the mood for drama. And I think I wasn't, and it was just like too heavy right away.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I'm not in the mood for this right now.
I've been in that mood for like a year now where I'm like, I can't handle any drama.
I need only things that make me laugh.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Oh my gosh. Always. Have you watched Kimmy Schmidt?
Yes.
It's over now. We can't. That's heavy again.
That's back to heavy.
Oh boy.
Might as well be into drama now.
Back to drama. So if you're ready for drama, you're going to be really happy with this episode because things are dramatic.
Yeah. Okay.
For the Rosenbergs. Okay. So in the song, when they say Rosenberg, they're referring to Julius and Ethel.
Ethel? Okay. She sounds so sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll talk about it.
Okay.
Okay. So Julius and Ethel Rosenberg were a married couple. Julius Rosenberg was born May 12th, 1918 in New York City. To Jewish immigrants. He was a member as a young person of the Young Communist League USA while he attended City College of New York, and he graduated in 1939 with a degree in electrical engineering. Ethel, whose maiden name was Greenglass, was born September 25th, 1915, also to a Jewish family in Manhattan. Originally, she wanted to be an actress and a singer, but she did not become either of those things. She ended up working in a secretarial position at a shipping company. She was involved with some labor disputes and joined the Young Communist League, where she met Julius in 1936. So she was around 20 when they met. They married in 1939, and they had two sons, Michael and Robert, in 1943 and 1947.
Okay. Sounds like a great life. I mean, other than maybe the Communist Party part.
But I mean, that plays a factor.
That has to be a big part of their lives. But
yes.
Tell me more.
Okay, so Julius joined what was called the Army Signal Corps and worked at Fort Monmouth in New Jersey, where he was an engineer inspector until 1945, and you'll find out why. So he was, you know, working as an engineer.
Gotcha.
He was fired when the U.S. Army discovered he had previously been a member of the Communist Party, because at that time that was seen as like, you can't have done this and be in this workforce. Like, especially, like, you're working for the Army, and you were part of the Communist Party, and it's, you know, basically the Cold War is starting.
Yeah.
So...
they're like, yeah, hard pass on you.
You're done. At this Fort Monmouth... how would you pronounce this? M-O-N-M-O-U-T-H. Monmouth. Monmouth? Right?
Is it in New York?
Yeah.
I think it's
Monmouth. Or is it New Jersey? Okay.
It's all sure, kind of the same.
Right. So that's where they did a lot of research on things that controlled guided missile
controls. Oh, okay.
So important.
Yeah, you
military...
can't be knowing that if you're going to tweet that back to your people.
No. Yeah, so they did a lot of like radar and electrical communications type things there. So that's obviously why he was fired, you know, under that suspicious pretense. Okay, so according to a book that was released in 2001 by Julius's former handler, Alexander Fexlikov.
Yeah.
Ooh, I tried real hard with that one.
I believe you.
Fexlikov. I can't. That's as good as it's going to get,
Russian?
Guys.
Russian?
Russian. Mm-hmm. Rosenberg
I got
was
that.
A...
I mean, that was the drift.
Yes,
it was like,
yes.
This Russian dude.
He's a Russian guy. Who was Julius's handler, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He was recruited by what was called the NKVD. This was a Russian agency originally created to conduct police work and overseeing the country's prisons and labor camps. Okay. Ooh. Okay.
Important.
Yes. That Julius was recruited by this force in 1942 by a spymaster by the name of Semyon Semyonov. Yeah, I nailed that. That's his name.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so...
His parents really thought that through.
Yeah, they did.
I mean...
Semyon Semyonov.
Brilliant. It's not like his name would have changed or like... No.
Nope, Semyon
Semyonov.
I get it. It looks really good when you read it like that. Okay, so originally Semyon was Julius's like contact through to this agency, and that recruited Julius like, hey, you're gonna basically spy for us, and then eventually Alexander became his like contact and handler.
Gotcha.
For this NKVD.
That group. Organization.
Yep. So Rosenberg provided apparently thousands of classified reports from the company Emerson Radio, including a complete proximity fuse. It's like a big electrical panel thing.
Okay.
Okay. And apparently, get ready for this connection, an upgraded model of which... was used to shoot down Gary Powers in the U2 incident in 1960, aka our first episode.
What?
Right?
So tell me that.
Okay. Julius Rosenberg.
Yes.
Stole information about a proximity fuse, which was used to shoot down Gary Powers' plane. 10 years later.
In the U2 incident.
In the U2 incident. Because if you remember, the U.S. was spying on the USSR.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out what they were doing. And they were doing this type of thing.
They
like
were doing what
mission,
they knew.
Or I'm sorry, missile, like land-to-air missile seeking.
So as
things.
We were being sneaky, they were being sneaky.
They had
sneaky.
Already been sneaky 10 years earlier.
They were already on the ball.
So they got the technology to shoot Gary Powers' plane down because Julius Rosenberg stole this information. Okay.
Damn.
Okay. So there's that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Apparently, Julius also recruited several other people into this NKVD service to spy and supply information through their jobs, respectively. And helped this effort of getting, like, thousands of documents from the National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics, stealing things from places like Lockheed, different, like, plane and craft technology. So just a lot of espionage Just so a lot.
He was like just good at it. So
he was doing it and he was recruiting other people to do it.
Gotcha.
Okay. All right. So here's where things get messy in case they were not messy enough.
Does it involve Ethel?
It does involve Ethel.
Ethel!
How did you know it's about to involve Ethel right now?
I just felt it in my bones.
Yeah.
Do I need more wine?
Oh my god, you just need such more wine.
I'm getting more wine.
Go get more wine. I'm gonna keep talking about it.
You tell me.
Okay. So, Alexander.
Yes.
Julius's handler learned through Julius that Ethel's brother, David... Okay, David Greenglass was working on the top secret Manhattan Project. If you're familiar with the Manhattan Project, yeah. Right?
But like, how would Ethel even know? Like, how would?
I don't even know. Okay, so.
But they knew because like they were spying on everything, so they knew they're everything
doing,
that
right,
everybody.
They're doing all the spying already. So Ethel's brother worked on the Manhattan Project. No big deal. Just, like, the biggest of deals.
Mm-hmm.
Get it. And,
just finished off
the
wine.
She just finished off a good bottle of some Zinfandel. It looks good. I mean, you don't have to put the top back on. It's empty bottle.
Just in case.
Just in
Safe
case.
Safe measure. Oh, all boy. The espionage talk.
All the espionage. You gotta bottle
just
gotta
it up. cover my tracks.
So, obviously, Julius's handler... Alexander was like, you need to recruit David to also spy. We need all of the information that's going on with what he's doing.
Right.
So in February of 1944, Julius was successful in recruiting sources from the Manhattan Project, including an engineer named Russell McNutt. We are 12.
Did he get David?
Yeah. Also David.
Was he... Maybe you're going to cover this, but was he conned?
No.
Or, like, he was like, you're my
David
brother-in-law.
David was, like, well aware of, like, what was happening.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
He was just like, yeah, bro.
No, David was definitely knew what he was doing.
Okay, David.
Yeah, he wasn't like, oh, tell me about your job. Like, what are you up to? No. It was not like that. It was like, give me this information. Apparently, Julius received a $100 bonus for recruiting Russell McNutt.
$100?
A $100, you say. Yeah.
Okay.
And specifically, Russell McNutt's. I'm only going to say it. That was the last time.
Oh, that's a shame.
Okay, I'll say it one more time. Okay, so Russell McNutt's...
He rustled up
information, basically providing the process for making uranium, you know, for bombs.
Oh, those nuts.
This is serious, Jamie. I'm going to need to take this very much more seriously. We're talking
about
uranium.
Holy
hell.
Okay.
Okay. All right, so... Okay, this is technically before the Cold War started, right? Okay, like, it's just before the Cold
War
started.
What year
are we? 1944. We're at the end of World War II. All right, so technically, the U.S. and Russia are allies at this time, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, right. So,
which
the Americans
seems so crazy.
Still... Right. America still did not seek or provide any... information from or share information with Russia, I'm sorry, or the Soviet Union about the Manhattan Project. Like, obviously, they didn't say, like, hey, you know, like, we're Russia, we're friends. Like, FYI, we're doing the Manhattan Project.
We're thinking about this.
We're thinking
Love
about making,
input.
Like, some, like, atomic bomb kind of things. Like, no, obviously not. It was totally top secret. Yeah. However, the U.S. was... shocked when the Soviets all of a sudden in 1949 they staged their first nuclear test, and it was like, wait a minute, how did you all of a sudden get our technology? Like, this is not normal.
feeling something's right. wrong here.
Right, like we were on the cutting edge of this and it was top secret, and now all of a sudden you also know how to use uranium the way that we're using it. Like,
I mean, we're the same team right now, but you like you stole from us.
Right. So between between 1944 when the Manhattan Project was happening, and then 5 years later when they did their first test when the Cold War then had started, the U.S. basically was like, oh, obviously, like, you stole information from us. Like, clearly.
Right.
All right. So, the U.S. in 1950, January 1950, the U.S. government finally discovers, like, that people have been sharing secrets, including members of the Manhattan Project, that they had been giving documents to the Soviets during World War II, several years earlier. And kind of there was this, like, domino effect that happened. There was a German theoretical physicist who was working for the British mission of the Manhattan Project who said that his courier was this guy named Harry Gold, who was arrested, and then Gold confessed and identified David Greenglass as a source. So, like, this one guy fell, and then it, like, led to other people falling.
This is, like, years after the, like, initial...
Yes.
Knowledge had been acquired.
Yeah, this is, like, 6 years later.
Like, can you imagine, like, after a couple of years, you'd be like, we got away with this.
No. Mm-hmm. Mm. But they did not. So then David is arrested first. Ethel's brother.
Oh.
Okay. He's arrested by the FBI for espionage in June of 1950, and he confesses to having passed on information to the USSR. And he claimed, you know, then that his sister's husband, Julius, had convinced his wife, him and his wife, Ruth, while they were visiting him in New Mexico. And he basically said, like, Julius is the one that you want. Like, Julius is the, he's the kingpin of, like, a lot of this espionage.
Right. Yeah.
And so, this is where things just get, like, really not good for Julius and Ethel.
Uh-oh.
Okay. So,
so he gets caught.
Yeah, I'm assuming. They're caught. Right. So now the Rosenbergs have been discovered.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Julius and his acts and his recruitment and everything. And there was a meeting of several government officials and the chairman of the Atomic Energy Commission, and they decided, it looks like, quote, like, Rosenberg is the kingpin of a very large ring, and if there's any way of breaking him by having the shadow of a death penalty over him, we want to do it. So they basically were like, they went into this trial saying, we want the death penalty for what this act that's happened.
Right. And like, how many acts that, like, they didn't even know about.
Right, because, okay, so now this, like I had mentioned, the U2 incident, this is still 1950, so this is still 10 years before that even happened.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, God.
A lot of information. Yeah. Even if it's not, like, information Julius provided, he was the one recruiting other people to provide information.
Right.
Okay. And this committee that had met basically determined, you know, we don't have a really strong case against Ethel, but it's important that she be convicted too and also given a stiff sentence. So they decide, we're not just going after Julius, we're going after Ethel too. Like, we're taking them both down, this husband and wife.
So, and at that point, it wasn't clear that Ethel had been a part of it? Like, she had to have known.
Oh, yeah, like, she definitely knew.
But, like, she technically... I mean, I guess.
Yeah.
But I feel like in that era, it could have been like, oh, what does she know?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a thing. But it seems like that just kind of went out the window.
Yeah.
And again, it's the same thing, like, when I'm watching The Americans, I even hear it in my tone of voice right now, where I'm like, they're just doing what they think they should.
Like, right. I know, I had such a hard time with this.
That's the whole thing with The Americans too. It's right. Like, you are rooting.
You're rooting for the villain.
For the villain and the history. But then at the same time, like, hearing that both of these people were American
They're American, so they were born. They're both born in New York.
Like that part of it is also crazy to me.
It is kind of interesting.
Tell me more. Sorry,
you're gonna no. You'll understand more about the Ethel situation in a minute. Unfortunately. Okay, so they have this weak case against Ethel, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're not really sure the case being made against her, the lawyers and, you know, everything, they're trying to build this case against her and they're not really sure what to do. So David and Ruth, okay, Ethel's brother
and his wife Ruth
are interviewed for a second time about Julius and Ethel.
Mm-hmm.
And shocking, their testimony changes. Okay. So David originally said that he'd passed the atomic data he'd collected to Julius on a New York street corner. In his second interview, he says he'd given the information to Julius in the living room of the Rosenbergs' apartment, and that Ethel, at Julius's request, had taken notes for him. Because the story went from, oh yeah, I passed this information along to him on a street corner, to, no, we were in their apartment and Ethel was taking notes.
Okay.
At her request.
Right.
All right.
Your story's changing, sir.
And then in Ruth's second interview, she basically elaborated on David's story, saying Julius took the information into the bathroom and read it, and when he came out, he called Ethel and told her that she had to type this information immediately, and that Ethel took notes on a typewriter while at a bridge table in their apartment. Mm. So
you're like, you're all a bunch of liars.
No.
Like, what do we believe? Right. Like, you're all scamming, cheating.
Well, so
liar pants.
At Ruth's second testimony, all of the charges against Ruth were dropped. So they made a deal with Ruth and David and basically said, if you
make it seem, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we can take down Ethel.
And Julius.
We'll let Ruth go, but David's still
on the hook here because he's already admitted to having done stuff.
Yeah. Like, he did some real things.
All right. So on August 11th of still 1950, Ethel testifies before a grand jury, and she takes the Fifth Amendment in every single question that's asked her. She pleads the Fifth. She says nothing. And she's taken into custody by the FBI.
Did they have kids?
So
you said that they had kids.
So crazy. No. It's literally what I was about to say.
I'm like, what's gonna happen?
Okay, so I don't know if you remember, but their sons were born in 1943 and 1947, and this is 1950.
Oh my god, they're just little babes.
They're babies.
Mm.
Like a 7-year-old and a 3-year-old. Her attorney had requested to parole Ethel because of their young children.
Yeah.
So she could at least make arrangements for her sons, and the request was denied.
I mean, this is big.
I just, like, honestly, since I've done this research, I've just been thinking about this, and, like, because I have children not of the exact same age, but I also have children, and I'm just like, oh my god, like, what?
But, like, you also wouldn't be putting, like, you wouldn't be making this choice.
No, unless, I wouldn't have been in this situation, like, but, like,
A, wouldn't be making this choice,
no.
And B, if you, like, if your life depended on it, and, like, you were caught up in something, you would be smart enough to have a backup plan of, like, if and when I go to jail,
I guess
my babies are going to be watched by the woman who lives down the hall. Like,
right, like, I guess. I don't know. It's just, but, like, the youngest one is, like, 3 years old. Like, the youngest one is a baby.
Yeah. So confusing.
All right, so
I'm going to do research about those children.
I'm going to get to them. Don't worry. We're going to get to the children. Yes. Okay, so Julius and Ethel are put under a lot of pressure to incriminate other people in the spying ring, which is what everyone else up until this point has done, right? David's like, you gotta get after Julius, and right, like, everyone's throwing everyone else under the bus here.
Well,
like,
and
everyone
it's also
is just like pointing
probably
the finger.
Like a bartering chip,
right?
Of
obviously,
like,
yeah.
Oh, I'll give you this information if you can, like, let my wife
like
go,
oh, like the person you really want, like the bigger fish is this guy. Like, that's
so
what everyone,
like,
has done
so
far.
Be like for his handler, no?
So that's what the Rosenbergs were. It was attempted that that would happen, but neither of them offered up any other information. They were like, no, we're not talking. No, like, I'm not going to give you any other names, not going to give you any other information. So they were charged with 11 overt acts. I don't know exactly what they were, but basically they were indicted, as was David, obviously. Like, David still, like, he admitted to espionage.
He's in trouble.
It is what it is. Okay, so finally, like, almost a year later, March 6, 1951, the trial officially starts. And the presiding judge is a man named Irving Kaufman. And the U.S. attorney, Irving Saple, was the prosecution.
Two Irvings. Still.
And then the criminal defense for the Rosenbergs was a lawyer named Emmanuel Block. And so the trial happens. You know, all of the David is talking about how he turned information to Julius in the apartment, and there were sketches of the atomic bomb.
Mm.
Both of the Rosenbergs were very defiant during the whole trial. During the testimony, both of them just asserted their Fifth Amendment right. Like,
right.
They did not, to not incriminate themselves, and they didn't respond to any questions about their involvement with the Communist Party. They just said nothing, basically. On March 29th, so the trial has lasted only a few weeks, they were convicted of espionage, and they were sentenced to death.
Oh,
on April 5th.
Shit.
Yep.
And this was in New York?
Yep.
Hmm.
Under the Section 2 of the Espionage Act of 1917.
Oh.
So, which prohibits transmitting or attempting to transmit to a foreign government information, quote, relating to the national defense. So that was the grounds for their conviction.
Yeah.
Ugh. The judge, Judge Irving Kaufman, upon the giving the death penalty to them, basically said he held the Rosenbergs personally responsible for espionage, but also deaths of the Korean War.
Because
at this point, like, the Korean War has started, and he's basically like, you're not only are you responsible for this espionage, like, you are now responsible for the deaths of thousands of people. And he's not...
You get in that catch 22. It's like, yeah, he's not wrong, but also, like, what USA? Like, are you thinking that nobody is trying to get in your pants? Like, nobody is trying to, like, you are smart, you're beautiful, you're doing all these things. Like, nobody is trying to sweet talk you.
Right. And it's also, like, clearly.
You're being naive, USA.
Clearly, Julius is at fault here, but obviously, so many other people were filtering information to the USSR.
Right, and it's like, you're not... I guarantee you, once you knew it was Julius, like, you probably could have tracked down more people.
Yeah. The judge also said, these are his words, I consider your crime worse than murder. So, there was afterwards, a campaign for clemency, which basically means, like, they tried to appeal the death sentence that they had been... that they had received. There was also widespread protesting of and claims of anti-Semitism because
they're Jewish,
and it basically was saying, you know, it's not just, this is not just a USSR issue, it's not just like a Communist Party thing, like, this couple is being persecuted because they're Jewish. So
I don't know how I would feel about that, like, if I were on, like, I'm just trying to put myself like on that jury.
Yeah.
And to be thinking about that, I don't think that that would even cross my mind.
But I don't know if I think it might have been different in the time. Like, I think it also might have, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
I don't know, but I feel like in that time, that wasn't, that was a huge deal to mm-hmm. be thinking that way.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of America who had just been fighting for, right. like, I don't think that that would have been, like, the common,
yeah.
I don't know.
But. So, it was believed more abroad, but not necessarily among the majority of the United States. So, more on an abroad, a global level.
That makes more sense. That makes sense.
And so, for example, the ACLU refused to acknowledge that any violations of civil liberties had been taken place. Other notable people who were in protest of this death penalty decision were Albert Einstein, which is surprising.
He was such a smart guy.
Yeah, and but I it's interesting to think about how, like, obviously his involvement with the Manhattan Project, and that was some of the information that was stolen. He still was against this decision.
I cannot wait to cover him in a future episode.
It's going
to
be so good.
Dibs.
Please, I'm not ready. I'm not emotionally or mentally ready for that.
He's a hooligan.
Yeah.
A smart one, though. Tell me more.
Sorry. I mean, like, other people who, you know, some Nobel Prize winners and then some artists like Frida Kahlo, Diego Rivera, Pablo Picasso were also in protest of this position that the government had taken.
Was it that the fact that they were being executed? Or the fact that they were, like,
I don't know if it, like, I don't know.
I don't know. If they thought, like, did they think that they were being falsely accused? Or, like, oh, yeah, they did this, but just, like, maybe don't give them the death penalty.
I think it was more of that.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure. And it could have been different from, like, person to person.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and some of those people, like those artists I named, were more, they were not necessarily communist, but they were, in that time, more considered more, like, left-leaning, liberal, in a different way than we use the word liberal now.
Yes. So different.
So, apparently the Pope appealed to President Dwight D. Eisenhower to spare the couple, but Eisenhower refused. And all other appeals were unsuccessful.
Ike wasn't having it.
Nope. There was actually an all-black labor union, the International Long Horsemen's Association. They stopped working for a day in protest as well. So there were people who protested this decision. There were people who were really unhappy with it in the United States and abroad. Okay, so let's talk about the execution. Oh, boy. The U.S. So it happened. It did happen.
Ugh.
It's going to happen. Okay. Sorry. The U.S. Federal Bureau of Prisons does not operate, or at the time, did not operate an electric chair at the time of the sentencing, so they were transferred to New York's Sing Sing Correctional Facility, and they were electrocuted by the executioner Joseph Frankel, or Francel, at sundown on June 19th, 1953. The execution was delayed from the originally scheduled date of June 18th because the Supreme Court Justice Douglas granted a stay of execution the previous day. That resulted from an intervention by a Tennessee lawyer whose efforts had been previously scorned by the Rosenberg's attorney, Emanuel Block.
Hmm.
Okay, so the execution was scheduled for 11 p.m., which is during the Jewish Sabbath that begins around sunset.
Mm-hmm.
And the Rosenberg's lawyer basically asked for more time, filing a complaint saying that this was disrespectful because it was the Sabbath and it was disrespectful to their Jewish heritage. And another attorney also made the argument before the Judge Kaufman, but the strategy, this, like, defense argument backfired and was rescheduled for 8 p.m. just before sunset.
Oh.
So
that it wasn't, like, directly interfering with the holiday?
Yeah.
Sneaky.
I don't know, some of the details of the execution are rough. I don't know if you want to hear them or not.
I kind of do.
Okay. This is probably not even the worst thing we've covered on this podcast, but, like, if you're squeamish, I guess, fast forward 30 seconds. Julius was executed first. He died after the first electric shock.
Were they together? Or were they in separate rooms?
Oh, gosh, I don't know.
It's fine.
I think they went one after the other. Julius... I feel
like that would be worse. Like, if they watched each other, or, like, if somebody saw the other... I don't know.
I don't think they had, like... I think it was one at a time.
Yeah, you wait in the hall, and then...
Yeah. Okay. Julius was first. He died after the first electric shock. His was quick. Ethel's was not I know.
Ethel!
Hers did not go as smoothly. She was given the normal course of 3 shocks, and then the doctor determined that she still had a heartbeat, and so 2 more shocks were administered, and eyewitnesses reported that was smoke steaming from her head.
Jesus.
So that is the thing that happened. That is the thing that I struggled so much. I'm trying, I really go back and forth about everything. Like, that is the thing our government did to people. However, these people obviously were involved with espionage and treason against our country. These were citizens who did bad things. Not really Ethel so much, though, you guys.
But, like, don't you think... Fuck. Like, maybe... I don't know. Like, if I were Ethel... Ugh. Like, and if it were my life... Like, she had to have known that her life was on the line. Like, she had... Her attorney...
Right, because they... I mean,
her lawyer, right. Whoever, had to have said, like, if they're you don't the talk, death. Right. They're gonna kill you. So, at what point are you, like... If I'm just that loyal to my husband...
I know.
Like, she joined...
Right, and it's not...
The party as well. So yeah. I'm wondering if maybe she had more...
Yeah.
...than she let on.
Or more than we know. Like, they're just... It's hard to say what exactly... Well, and now we'll never know. Right. Well...
But all the same, that's also just shame.
It's rough. It's rough. There was a funeral service held in Brooklyn on June 21st. And it was reported that 500 people attended while there were some 10,000 people standing outside.
Oh, like outside the
cemetery? Yeah. Okay, so I just want to talk about some information that was released, declassified in 1995.
Oh. Yeah. So, like, a long time after.
Yes. Several decades later.
My God. Yes.
In a time frame in which we are alive, which is crazy. Showed that Ethel's role was a lot more limited than was led on in the case. And that originally it showed that, like, she had money and paraphernalia for Julius. She was an intermediary between contacts. She was involved in the recruiting, that she was present at these meetings. And there was actually no evidence in any of these files. They were called the Vinova decryptions. And there was other information that was even released in 2009. Nothing supported any of these claims that she was involved, basically. Nothing directly linking her to any of this stuff that Julius was very much into.
Like
the Manhattan
Project, like that sort of stuff? But she was at meetings?
No. Like, really, no.
There was all of those things I listed.
Nothing happened. Basically, no evidence of any of that for Ethel. Now, it doesn't mean that she wasn't. It just, there really was no evidence.
Right. But it's just like, how do you get away with that?
Right.
And then to sentence that person to death.
Apparently, the deputy attorney general who was involved with the court case, when asked about the death sentence imposed on Ethel, basically said she called our bluff. Like... it's such a mess. Okay, let's talk about David and Ruth, because they're frustrating. Ooh, yeah,
what happened to David and Ruth?
Okay, so obviously David was, like, the key prosecutor, or the witness for the prosecution. Yeah. I'm sorry. He later recanted his testimony about his sister in 2001, recently.
Oh, my God.
And he stated, quote, "I frankly think my wife did the typing, but I don't remember." Like, what, dude? You threw your sister under... She literally died.
Like, a painful, awful death because of...
You left your nephews orphaned. Okay. He also said, my wife is more important to me than my sister. Or my mother or my father, okay? And she was the mother of my children. But he didn't express any remorse for his sister, for this decision. But he did say, I did not realize the death penalty would be invoked.
Bullshit.
But he said, I would not sacrifice my wife and my children for my sister.
Ooh. I mean...
So...
I don't know.
It's just really... I mean, if you think you have sibling problems, you don't.
Right. You like, don't. This is not...
It's bad.
Even... Oh, God. I need to have, like, a strong talk with my brother.
Uh-huh.
Like...
it would be very, very bad. Okay, in 2008, so, like, a bunch of information became declassified or were released, like, transcripts were released.
Mm-hmm.
In 2008, one of the documents that was released, a testimony that Ruth had given said, didn't you, to Ruth, write down the information on a piece of paper? She replied, yes, I wrote the information on a piece of paper, and Julius took it with him. So, basically, what she had said, where she said, Ethel... took the notes. That was like her original testimony where she's like, no, I did it.
Oh, so it was you, Ruth?
Mm-hmm.
And then what comes of that?
Nothing. I mean, this is nothing.
And it's just like you die in your old age. Like, just whatever.
So let's talk about the Rosenbergs' children, obviously. They had two very young sons. They were adopted.
Robert and Michael.
Michael and Robert, yes. They were adopted by no relatives, but a high school teacher. He was a poet and a songwriter. He and his wife, so Abel and Anna.
Mm-hmm.
And so Michael and Robert ended up taking their last name of Miropol, I'm sorry. They did acknowledge that their father was involved with espionage, but they maintained that their mother was innocent, and they actually ended up going on to write some books.
Oh.
They co-wrote a book called We Are Your Sons, The Legacy of Ethel and Julius Rosenberg. They founded the Rosenberg Fund for Children, a nonprofit foundation providing support for children of targeted liberal activists and youth who are targeted activists as well. Which, wow. So they still, I mean, thankfully this couple adopted them. I mean, regardless of, like, everything, like, these were two young children.
Still so awful.
And Michael recently retired as the chair of professor of economics at Western New England College.
Okay.
And his daughter, Ivy, directed a documentary about her grandparents called Heir to an Execution, which was featured at Sundance. I have not seen it, but I feel like I need to now. I
want to see it now.
I'm also shocked that this is not a movie, like there's not like a major motion picture.
Where somebody is up for an Oscar as the role of Julius.
Right, and I want like, not even just like the Julius and Ruth story, but like
Ethel?
But just like Ethel and David, like this brother and sister. Yeah, like,
to like go in that, or even just like David and Ruth. Like, from their perspective of, like, the drama that could ensue between those two talking and, like...
Right? Like, that would... I would love to
all the movie producers.
Right. I wonder if... Yeah. Oh, yeah. So many of them.
Mm.
There was a campaign to exonerate Ethel Rosenberg, even as recently as March of 2016. So, like, 3 years ago.
Whoa.
The Sons launched a petition actually when Obama was in office and asking to exonerate Ethel, but nothing actually really came of this. So no U.S. president or any attorney general has ever exonerated Ethel. Weird connection.
Yes.
Just because you need a weird thing. Ruth died on my 21st birthday. My birthday comes up a lot in these episodes.
So many times.
And I look for other people's birthday like I really do. I look for your birthday. It never comes up.
My birthday.
It's like the fourth time my birthday has come up, but except for it's not someone's birthday. Ruth died I remember my 21st
birthday. She died and you lived.
I lived good. Lived
that night. I wasn't a part of it.
No, you weren't 21 yet.
No.
You're a baby.
Couldn't hang.
I went to the library is what happened.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, that's the Rosenbergs. And I cut out a lot of information, and this is still a very long episode.
It was very informative, though. I, like, knew, obviously, like, oh my god, I'm gonna bring up the Americans again. But, like, that is how I knew that this was a thing. Like, I knew that there were the Russian spies and, like, all of that. But, like, these were American citizens.
Yeah.
Who then got brought into that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a whole nother level that I guess wasn't even.
I know, that's. I actually was surprised before I did the research. I had assumed that, and this is that sounds terrible. Like I had assumed that they were not natural born citizens like that, but they were. They were born and raised in New York, both of them, which is interesting. I was thinking about this, and honestly, I know we said Johnny Ray might have started the fire, but like this whole trial and the Rosenbergs, like they might have also started the fire because a lot of the things that happened with this right,
like actual war,
right, things that happened in World War One, in the Korean War, in the 60s, all there's things that tie back to them and to this and just the trial, and it's just wow.
It's a lot. I want a movie to be made about this. Can I donate $25?
Yeah, we're going to start a Kickstarter.
Yeah.
No, we're not. We're too tired. Someone please go start a Kickstarter to make this be a movie.
Tell your friends.
Bye.
I'm so tired.
Are you done? Are you good?
Good.
I'm done.
Is it?
Bye. Wir sind hier zum Feiern, lass die Box